Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Last week, Governor Kasich announced his proposed two-year state operating budget, a $63.3 billion plan that lowers taxes overall by about $1.4 billion, but broadens the state sales tax base by dozens of services, everything from dog grooming to legal fees. In addition to a 50% tax cut for small businesses, the governor would also cut income taxes across the board. Here is Governor Kasich announcing his proposal in a recent YouTube video.
I'm not only proposing that Ohio cut taxes for small business, but for every other Ohioan also. My budget cuts Ohio's income tax rates by 20% over 3 years. That means Ohio's income tax rates will now all be below 5%, so you and your family can keep more of the money you earn.
Joining us now to discuss the governor's plan is Columbus Dispatch State House reporter Jim Siegel. Welcome back to the show, Jim.
Thanks. Good to be here.
So, some people have called it a shell game. Some people say, I can't talk about this because I'm not sure how things are going to work out anyway. What do we know? What's the overarching philosophy here with what Governor Kasich's proposing?
Well, the overarching, it seems to be that it's a shift from income tax to sales tax. Since the income tax was first implemented in Ohio, you know, I think it was 40 some years ago, there has been, you know, the income tax for the most part has been the primary, you know, tax revenue driver for the state budget. This would switch that. This would now make the sales tax our primary revenue source. We're talking about reducing the rate of the sales tax from 5.5 down to 5%. Now that's just a state rate. Everyone notices they pay more than that on their restaurant bills and other things, but that's because of the local county piggyback tax. But at the same time, the expansion is enormous. What they're talking about expanding to other services,
82 different services, I think.
Yeah, it's just about, you know, all economic activity basically outside of education, healthcare, and often some home repair and home issues like rent and such. You're going to see a $3.1 billion sales tax increase over the next 2 years, which will be offset by that income tax cut that you mentioned that the governor is very, very excited about. It's a 20% across the board for everyone, 50% for small business owners who take their income as a pass-through entity. And so they – you know, it would be about a $1.4 billion, according to the governor's math, savings over 3 years. But there are groups, and I'm sure we'll talk to some. You'll talk to some later today. He'll tell you about that. Doesn't impact everyone the same way. Those at the upper income brackets pay more in income tax. When they cut the tax across the board, they will get more of the dollar benefit from that tax.
But the consumption tax, don't they consume more?
They do, but it's generally. There's a school of thought that those at the lower income brackets tend to spend a greater percentage of their income on a sales tax than those at the upper income levels. That's something that is debated and discussed.
That's a pretty classic point that's made over and over again.
Right.
How does Governor Kasich respond to that?
Well, he's responding that he's lowering the overall rate, and he's basically saying this is a better way, and there's a school of thought out there, this is a better way to tax people in an overall economy, to make it's a better tax system to make a broader sales tax rather than a progressive income tax. Now there are of course others who would argue the opposite, but that is in conservative circles that has been a philosophy that I think is gaining steam, and is, you know, I don't think Ohio is the only place where we're going to see that attempted.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about the governor's tax proposal. He unveiled it last week. We're talking with Jim Siegel right now, the Columbus Dispatch. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. This reaches into every little nook and cranny that I could possibly imagine, and some I couldn't imagine. There are a lot of big guns in here, organizations or industries, I should say, that are going to be affected by this. It's not just the taxes that come out of my pocket to pay for funeral services, say, but it's the cost that the funeral services ostensibly will pass on to the consumers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And what it'll cost them, and there's services in there that have never been taxed. They had never provided sales tax before. That's an additional mm-hmm. onus on them.
Right, and that's why some are calling this the Lobbyist Full Employment Act, because everybody who has a constitu- you know a who's lobbying on behalf of someone who's getting taxed under this plan is, there's a chance they could, be coming in and trying to weigh heavily on legislators. Now, the governor, because he made this list so expansive, I think that does help him in selling it.
Negotiating?
Yeah, because there aren't a lot of folks who are left out, so he can't argue that he's just picking on certain folks. If you keep the list expansive, you can say, look, we're all in the same boat here, and you shouldn't just cherry pick and decide that we're going to pull the attorneys out or we're going to pull the CPAs out or the funeral directors, because that wouldn't be fair. So that I think that does help him sell this, but I do think this is going to be quite an interesting battle in the legislature.
Yeah, the same boat, or everybody's in a boat, different size boats. One of the aspects of the proposal would freeze or ban additional sales tax increases at the county level. And joining us now is Larry Long. He's executive director of the County Commissioners Association of Ohio. Larry, can you tell us what you know about what the governor's plan on that level?
A little short on details right now, Ann, but what we do know is that the governor would propose to roll back the rates that have been enacted locally by local elected officials and in some cases approved by the voters by anywhere up to 35-36%. For example, here in Franklin County, the half percent county rate, that does not include the COTA rate, would the 0.75% would go to 0.5%. And again, you'll see the same thing. Delaware County rate would go from 1.25% to 0.8%, same in Cuyahoga County. And so what we're really concerned about is not only the idea that they're rolling back locally enacted and often voter-approved taxes, but we also are in a situation where no county could adjust their rate for the next 3 years, and that's a real big problem around the state.
Franklin County was just—they're mulling it among many, many different options.
Franklin is considering it, and underneath this proposal, they could not enact the tax, as I understand it, until July of 2016.
Is there any question, or has anybody raised the issue of constitutionality?
Well, we have, and we're raising some issues in that regard. The research is still being done. It's a very complicated issue because, again, the only reason we have the authority to enact the sales tax is that the legislature gave us that right and that authority. And so now we've never really dealt with the issue of rolling back or reducing a rate approved by the electors at some point in time. One of the very difficult issues is we have some counties that have passed that tax and have used it to do improvements and have debt. They've gone out and borrowed money. And part of the provisions of those bond documents, the loan documents, to protect the people who buy the bonds is that you will not, the county will not roll back that rate until that bond is paid back. So there's a lot of questions from a county perspective here.
Yeah, there's pretty basic issues going on here. I mean, the Kasich administration must have responded to some of these concerns.
Well, not directly yet, that I've seen at least. I don't know how much they've... I mean, they're basically saying, look, we don't want to try to cut taxes at the state level and have them explode at the local level because of this expanded sales tax. At the same time, the county folks and local governments are saying, look, you guys have been killing us on our local government funding for years.
Over the course of 10 to 12 years is steadily
increasing. Right. The amount in the governor's budget for local government funding in 2015 would be, I think we calculated, we considered like 30-some percent less than it was 18 years ago. So it's, it's not, they've been taking hits for a while. And they're saying, look, we should be able to benefit from this expansion. Now they will benefit some. They will get about They will be allowed to grow by 10% a year.
It'll be capped,
but it'll be capped. And I think that's supposed to, according to the governor, that would raise about another $120 million over 2 years. But it's nowhere near. I think the estimate is like $700 million. Larry could probably tell me better, but I think it's like $700 million if they didn't cap it.
That is the figures we've been given from the administration. If they did not cap it, there'd be a $700 million increase across the state, and that's counties and transit authorities. Now, the 10% growth, we're still trying to clarify that. But remember, we would be receiving some growth anyways. And so we estimate, at least what the budget estimates, is that sales tax revenue, I believe, without the base increase, would still grow by about 6-6.5%.
Now, the County Commissioners Association of Ohio has been around a long, long time. It's a pretty steady, has a very steady keel at the State House, a very familiar entity. But the governor has warned lobbying groups and special interest groups. It wasn't exactly jump on the bus or get run over this time, but he has said, don't try to stop this. Don't be part of the problem, part of the solution.
Well, and we want to be part of the solution. Again, there are possibly other ways to deal with this issue. I guess one of the questions is, if the governor wants to lower his rate as a trade-off, the state rate in terms of a trade-off for the base expansion, maybe he should just say that the counties will not receive, quote, taxes on the new base, the service base. Now, that may create—
But you won't lose what you've already
that's
established.
Right. And it really— Then it avoids this argument, this philosophical argument about whose taxes are being reduced by whom. And again, we have big concerns about the state coming in and reducing our rate. It's being done at this point in time in relationship to a base expansion. But what happens 5, 6, 7 years from now? What would prohibit the state at any time from coming in and unilaterally reducing local rates that were enacted locally and sometimes approved by the voters?
And this is an ongoing issue, not just for Governor Kasich, but for past governors as well, in that Ohio's tax base, it's not just they have control over the state tax rates, but it's actually state and local when you combine them together that is what really gets talked about, because, you know, we have county and transit authority sales taxes. We have a lot of local income taxes. Schools have local income taxes. That's kind of rare in this country. So when you compile them all, that's where Ohio's tax rate starts to go up. And the governor really, I mean, when you're talking about the state tax rate, the governor can only move the needle so far. The state, I mean, even now the top income bracket is less than 6%. So even if you wiped it out, you're talking about, 6%, but on that rate. And most people pay far less of a rate than that. And so that's why I think this is going to be a continuing struggle, because the governor doesn't like the fact that local taxes continue to rise, although, as Larry will tell you, I'm sure they will say there's good reasons for that. But that's kind of where the dynamic is.
Also with us, Roger Geiger, he's vice president and Ohio executive director for the National Federation of Independent Business. Roger, there is this, and among this 82 entities that would be affected by this sales tax are people like the guy that cuts your hair, who also happens to be someone you represent in the NFIB. What about someone like that? Let's just go to that smallest common denominator.
Well, Ann, this is an interesting issue for us as an organization. We represent exclusively small family-run businesses. That's who NFIB is. We have about 25,000 members here in Ohio. But it's interesting because, first of all, whether you like him or don't like him, I got to hand it to the governor. He's really shook it up. He's been bold in his approach in my 20-plus years as the executive director here. This is the governor who I think has offered the most dramatic budget change, tax change that I've seen. It cuts two ways for small businesses. First of all, on the income tax, that is a very, very plus for small businesses. We have over a million small businesses, as Jim talked about, the pass-through entities, partnership, subchapter S's, self-employed individuals. They pay all their business tax through their income. You know, usually we talk about economic development and attracting business by doing big business cuts, by doing corporate tax cuts. This is the first time I've seen a very dramatic tax cut directed squarely at those million small businesses, many of them self-employed individuals. So that is a huge plus, and we can come back and talk about what that 20% does. But that is really targeted at small businesses, plus the deduction of up to 50% for the first $750,000. That combination is dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
But absolutely right. If you look at the expansion of the sales tax, the broadening of the base, if you will, of those 82, 83, depending on how you count them, they are predominantly small business enterprises. They're the barber that you talked about. They're the dog groomer. They're the bowling alleys. They're the laundromats. Those are all dominated by small businesses. And so you have a cost of collection issue for many of those folks. And you give the good example. I have a small barber downtown Columbus. He doesn't even take credit card. He's a cash-based only business. He's self-employed to electronically get up to speed to be able to remit the sales tax to the state. small businesses always, it costs them a lot more. They get a quarter of a percent back to be the tax collector, but it really costs that guy probably about 13% of what he collects in terms of his own filings and CPA work. And
because collecting tax costs money.
It costs money. You know, you have to set up a system. You have to do electronic filings. You have to have an accountant. You have to have a bookkeeper. I mean, that stuff all costs small business. And the smaller you get, the more expensive it is. So the broadening of base has a big impact there. It also has a big impact because in this budget, the governor is singling out two huge areas of service. One is CPAs and the other is law firms. And those become a huge cost to small businesses because they have to retain accountants and lawyers. They're not like corporate America who has those services in-house. So they're paying premium dollars plus now paying a new tax on their accounting and legal fees. So, yes, it cuts two ways here.
We're talking about the governor's tax cut proposal. If you have a question or comment, give us a call. Larry Long, I have a few more questions for you. Are you able to stay for a few more minutes
after this?
Yes, I am. All right. When we return, we'll continue the conversation. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and Friday, February 15th, is Match Day for our station. This is an exciting one-day giving event that helps support WOSU Public Media. During Match Day, your investment in NPR News and local news will be matched by a group of generous WOSU donors. This match is in effect for one day only. Have your dollars matched. Don't miss Match Day this Friday. For more information, visit WOSU.org, and thanks for your support. Partly sunny skies for today with gusty winds, and it is currently 51 degrees in downtown Columbus, but expect temperatures to fall to around 39 degrees by 5 o'clock today. Clouds tonight and a low of 28 degrees, mostly sunny and a high of 41 for Tuesday. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
We are talking about the governor's proposed tax budget for the state. In his $63.3 billion dollar plan, it lowers taxes overall by $1.4 billion, but broadens the state sales tax base by dozens, 82 or 92 services, everything from dog grooming to legal fees. We're going to move on to the more philosophical arguments, but first I wanted to ask Larry Long of the County Commissioners Association of Ohio, what about, we were just talking with Roger Geiger about small businesses and the cost that they will incur to actually collect the taxes. What about at the government level? Whose job is it going to be to do that?
Well, and the tax commissioner is responsible for the administration of the tax, and the vendors, each individual vendor remits the tax, is responsible to be an agent of the state. They collect the tax, remit the tax to the state of Ohio, and they actually they retain, I think it's a 0.75% fee for doing that. So they, whatever they collect, they save 0.75%, remit the rest of the state, and then in the case of counties, that is, it's both the state and the county rate that's collected. The state then, 3 months later, passes the county share back to the county government.
Well, Larry Long, thanks for joining us today.
You're really welcome. Appreciate it.
Good to be here. Larry Long is the executive director of the County Commissioners Association of Ohio. Still with us, Jim Siegel from the Columbus Dispatch and Roger Geiger from the Ohio National Federation of Independent Business, joining us now to talk a little bit more about the philosophical underpinnings of this. Zach Schiller, he's research director for Policy Matters Ohio. Hi, Zach. Hello, Zach. Welcome to the show.
Very good. I'm glad to be here.
And Steve Stanek, he's a research fellow on budget and tax issues for the Heartland Institute. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
Let's talk a little bit about the, as I mentioned, the philosophical underpinnings of this and, you know, how big of a change this really is philosophically for a state like Ohio. Zach, the common, you know, it's very pretty fundamental. It's commonly thought that consumption taxes, particularly on this broad scale, would affect lower income or middle income people more than very wealthy or wealthy and well-to-do people.
Yeah, well, first, I think it's important for everyone to understand that Ohio doesn't have high taxes. You know, our taxes are pretty much right in the middle when you look at all the taxes, state and local, that we collect. So you need to understand that as an underpinning. This proposal would definitely give a great deal back to the richest Ohioans while increasing slightly or somewhat the amount that people on the bottom and pay. And so, you know, we don't think that's a good idea, particularly when we've had growing inequality and particularly when we've gone through this before. You know, this is not the first time that we've seen a proposal for a major income tax cut. We did it in 2005, and it hasn't worked. You know, Ohio has generated, we're down 230,000 jobs since then. We were told when it first started, well, don't look at it too quickly. You've got to take some time for this to go into effect. Now we're told, oh, well, you know, the recession means it doesn't make any difference. This was sold as a way to improve Ohio's economy. It was going to be a very big deal, and it hasn't done so. So, you know, the country as a whole has gained jobs marginally over that time. The Ohio has lost them. And so we don't think that as an economic mechanism, this is a particularly effective way to do things at the same time as it redistributes income to the top.
Steve Stanek, what about the breadth and depth of this new sales tax proposal? Is this in keeping with the idea that you want to cut back the income tax? And I mean, is this as simple as all that, income tax versus consumption tax?
Well, generally, I fall down on the side of those who believe that the income tax is a very damaging tax. On income is really a tax on people who are trying to earn a living, and I think that is bad to do to people. Consumption tax, broad-based, is generally viewed as less distorting to the economy because if you have low tax rates and a low tax base, there's less incentive for people to take various actions to avoid taxes. This gentleman who just spoke talked about the wealthy. Well, the wealthy people have very many ways that they can avoid paying the highest income taxes. They can put investments in non-taxable vehicles. They can take deferred compensation spread over several years to reduce their effective tax rates. There are many things wealthy people can do. And so I generally believe a simple, broad-based consumption tax is generally a good thing. The problem is that when you start expanding the tax base to these services that you've mentioned, you make it very difficult for very small business people. My father is 80 years old, and for his entire adult life, my father has been a barber. Cash and checks. He doesn't do credit cards or anything like that. When you have very small business people like that who suddenly have to comply with this, you make things more difficult for them, more expensive for them, because they have to buy software and things to track this stuff that they haven't had to do before. Ohio right now is ranked by the Tax Foundation as the number 39 on the business-friendly list. 50 is the worst. Number one is the top, so they're near the bottom as far as business climate goes because of their tax system. They're ranked 42nd in the nation for their income tax system because it's a very complicated tax system on the income tax. You have in Ohio numerous local governments that impose their own income taxes on top of the state income tax, and that makes things even more complicated. So they need to look for ways to make the tax system in Ohio less complicated. It is true that Ohio's overall somewhere in the middle when you rank the states, depending on who does the ranking, there's always a little variance, but mm-hmm. Ohio typically falls in the middle there. But it is widely known to be a very complicated tax system, and the more complicated a tax system is, the more difficult it is for businesses and individuals to comply with it, and that means they have to spend more, just to pay their taxes.
What about the idea that he's spreading the burden across all of these kinds of services and that, you know, when you do that, it's no one can really say they're alone in this?
Yeah.
Well,
go ahead, Zach Schiller.
No, go ahead.
Well,
go
we think that actually we need to tax more services, and that while we do want to carefully look at the ones that the governor has proposed, because we do obviously exclude some services from taxation or some things from taxation, especially that low-income people need to buy.
Food,
right?
And medicine.
Drugs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't tax prescription drugs. Mm-hmm. We have an exemption for that. You know, the fact is, if you don't tax services, eventually you're not going to have much of a sales tax because everybody knows that we're becoming a service economy. So it makes a lot more sense to tax the services and then find protections for people who are going to be most negatively affected. And you can do this with things like an earned income tax credit and other kinds of things that will mean that lower and moderate income people won't be paying, you know, most of them won't be paying more as a net thing. And you need a tax system that is adequate. You know, you can't just look at one factor. I would also say that, you know, people talk a lot about simplicity. This proposal, when it comes to the sales tax issue and how it deals with the counties, as Larry was talking about a minute ago, is nothing but simple. They even acknowledge that it's complicated. It's a Rube Goldberg mechanism they've set up as far as mm-hmm. the counties are concerned. Mm-hmm. So we don't think that's a good way to go. But, you know, I think that there are a lot of different elements to this. And on the whole, I think that it's wanting. But there are some good things in it, the severance tax also. So, you know, we need to look at the parts of it that are worthwhile and keep them while throwing out the income tax portions of it that will simply drain revenue without accomplishing much. And I would say also about the so-called small business tax cut, because it isn't a small business tax cut. It's a business income tax cut that will go to owners of hedge funds and large businesses and not just small businesses. But, you know, that's creating a whole new method of tax avoidance. You say that half of somebody's income isn't taxable, won't they find a way for that to be what their income is? So, you know, we think that this has a lot of problems as far as, you know, the whole income tax side of it.
Because the idea of how we define a small business comes into play here, right, Roger Geiger? How are we defining a small business for the purposes of this budget?
Well, I would take issue with the gentleman who just spoke, because we're talking about over a million small businesses that would be able to take advantage. So that very same barber that we've all been talking mm-hmm. about, he would get to take advantage of it. So yeah, it's easy to tack the top bracket. Sure, they'll get they'll get breaks too, but the vast majority are folks that you see on Main Street. They're the barbers, they're the laundromats, they're the dry cleaners. They're the restaurant owners. That's who we're really talking about, because they're all pass-through entities.
So, but Jim Siegel, well, how are we defining small business for the purposes of the conversation today?
Well, they're allowing the 50% income tax cut to go into effect on up to $750,000 worth of income. And again, I think it is important to stress that is income. This is not a tax on sales. This is not a tax on This is not a gross receipts tax like the CAT tax. This is what you've taken home. So this is $750,000. That's where they're going to stop it. Now, if you make more than $750,000, you still get the tax cut. You just have to stop. The income over $750,000 will not see the 50% cut.
Bruce in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Bruce. You had a question?
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm.
The gentleman from the Small Businesses Association, I was wondering if we're actually moving into a service economy, or has manufacturing waned so much that all is left is the service economy?
Services
have always been there, but now that manufacturing has gone, all we have left is tax and service, and we're not moving to a service economy. We've always had those services around. Mm-hmm.
You make a good point, but I think manufacturing is on the resurgent here in Ohio. This has always been a strong agriculture and manufacturing state. We like to say we grow things and we make things here in Ohio. That is our heritage. I am by no means giving up on our manufacturing base. It's still a very strong base. But as somebody else mentioned earlier, we are moving to a more service economy. That's not just Ohio. That's us in this country. And that's the argument about, for those who want to argue about broadening the sales tax, is that you know, the whole original idea of the sales tax was for consumer goods. Well, we didn't have such a robust service economy, and so the argument is, why should you, just because you're buying a hard product, should you pay the tax on if you're also offering a service? Maybe it's more equitable as we move into the a service economy that we also tax those services. But I think there are unintended consequences, as we've been talking about.
Steve Stanek, I mean, traditionally, where do we get the small businesses? Where do they come from? Don't they tend to come from the service economy?
Well,
the cobbler is gone. No one's, you know, cobbling shoes together at the corner. It's usually someone providing a service, like shining your shoes.
Well, yeah, that's true to an extent, except literally, excuse me, I'm getting over a cold here. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Literally two blocks from where I live is Kreischer Optical. Kreischer Optical is a small specialty firm that makes lenses. Camera lenses, telescope lenses, those kinds of things. Very small business. It was started by a brilliant guy who lives in my town. About two doors down from him is a tool and die maker. Right next door to him, I'm picturing in my mind this little strip near me, right next to him is a plastics mold maker. These are all small businesses. They have just a handful of employees, but they're very highly skilled employees making stuff literally in a little strip area two blocks from my house. So we do see these businesses all the time. Manufacturing in the United States is strong. The manufacturing employment isn't what it used to be because we now have a whole lot of machines and technology doing what human beings used to do. But manufacturing output in this country is very strong, and highly skilled people are in manufacturing now. I would like to make a point here. I think we make a big mistake when we focus on taxes without talking about spending. Spending is what drives taxes. No matter what tax you're talking about, that tax ultimately is collected to pay for government. And when we look at what has been happening around the country and in Ohio specifically, we see big increases in spending. In the last 5 years, total spending in Ohio has gone up by about 23%. I went back over some IRS figures and things, and if we adjust for inflation since 2005, there's been a nearly 25% increase in spending in Ohio. That's adjusted for inflation. That's in 2005 constant dollars. We have to look for ways to control spending because ultimately it is spending that drives taxes. No matter what tax you're talking about, it has to pay for spending.
Well, I think Mr. Spanik is, you know, just taking a sort of ideological position here that doesn't relate to reality here in Ohio. The fact is we had a budget crisis 2 years ago because we were giving away $2.5 billion in tax cuts. And the notion that spending is going up by some gigantic amount, yes, we're seeing spending on Medicaid go up just as healthcare spending costs are going up for every healthcare vendor and across the economy, and that's experienced by the government as well. But you look at this budget, and you know, it's basically a flatline budget outside of education and healthcare, and you know, which is in effect a real decrease. So to think that spending is the issue, to my mind, is just kind of
ultimately, it's how many dollars do you want to spend? And your governor is calling for a 10% and more than 10% increase in the next year total. Now, yeah, a lot of that is driven by Medicaid. A lot of that is driven by those important things, but ultimately you have to pay for it, and you have to look for ways to control spending somewhere, and maybe we should look for ways to control Medicaid. Medicaid is one-third of Ohio's budget.
Well, I mean, look at what's already happening in that area. I think that this is a national problem that isn't going to be solved at the state level, frankly, as much as you can make good efforts.
Well, for now, that's all we have time to talk with Zach Schiller, Research Director for Policy Matters Ohio. I'm sure the conversation will continue. Zach, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Also, Steve Stanek, Research Fellow on Budget and Tax Issues for the Heartland Institute. Steve Stanek, thank you for joining us as well. I hope you'll join us again.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
You
bet. Bye-bye.
Take care. Still with us, Jim Siegel of the Columbus Dispatch, and also Roger Geiger of the Ohio National Federation of Independent Businesses. We're going to continue our conversation when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, the Obama administration's argument on drone warfare, even against Americans. We'll push deeper on drones, killing, and the law. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us today, and stay right here in 20 minutes. Hour 2 of All Sides begins. And we'll have a discussion of the intersection of food and public health. That's from 11 till noon here on 89.7 NPR News. Expect partly sunny skies today with temperatures falling to around 39 degrees by 5 o'clock today. Clouds tonight and colder, a low of 28 degrees. Sunshine and a high of 41 for Tuesday. Support comes from Meijer, a family-owned Midwest Supercenter. Meijer is dedicated to helping keep families healthy by offering Meijer brand natural and organic items like produce, canned goods, and more. Experience the difference. Information at Meijer.com. And support comes from Clintonville Academy, college prep education for pre-kindergarten through 8th grades. Clintonville Academy celebrates 35 years and now participates in the EdChoice program for fall of 2013. The CA Winter Open House is Sunday, February 24th from 2 to 4 p.m. Details at clintonvilleacademy.org. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. We're talking about Governor Kasich's plans to change how much and what sales taxes to levy in the state of Ohio, a lower overall income tax, but an extensive and broad new spectrum of taxable services would be created in the second and final operating budget of his four-year term. Governor Kasich's idea isn't necessarily unique. Other Republican governors also are working on the same combination of lower income taxes and increased revenue from sales tax. And by the way, we, of course, extended an invitation to the Kasich administration to join us today. And apparently they're really busy right now. So hopefully in days to come, we will hear from the Kasich administration on their proposal. Joining us right now is New York Times reporter Richard Stevenson. He wrote about the trend toward away from income and toward sales taxes last week. Welcome to the show, Richard.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Similar stories are playing out in Louisiana, Nebraska, Kansas. You wrote that there are obvious political benefits to a robust tax-cutting record to present to conservative primary voters. So now this is maybe a little bit politics then?
Well, I think there are a few things going on here. I mean, obviously, some of this is political, among those who have been trying to pursue these kinds of policies are Republican governors like Bobby Jindal and Sam Brownback and your own governor, John Kasich, who have high political national profiles and, you know, potentially could be part of a 2016 presidential race. But, you know, some of this is also about, the economy coming back. Some of it is about, the ideology of taxes. And some of it is, kind of legitimate policy debate about what's the most efficient way of collecting taxes, of getting revenue, and of, spurring an economy to grow.
There's been talk just over the weekend that this is the work of the American Legislative Exchange Council, a nationwide organization of legislatures and special interest groups, and that it's not isolated to just even those four states, but it's something that's being circulated throughout the country as an idea.
Well, I mean, ALEC is, you know, very active on these kinds of things. I don't have any firsthand knowledge about what involvement they had in Ohio. I think they have been, you know, very involved in you know, with some of the labor-related issues in the past there. But this is something that has been, you know, central to, you know, conservative politics in America for, you know, probably 20 years now, the idea that you should reduce or even eliminate income taxes and substitute some kinds of consumption taxes, that it's simpler, it's fairer in a sense, although, you know, we can get into the question of ultimate economic fairness as well, and that it helps from a conservative perspective to limit the size of government, which is, you know, really oftentimes what's going on here.
You talked with Joseph Henchman of the Tax Foundation. It's a conservative-leaning research group, and he said that there's more growth with consumption taxes, but that some people prioritize fairness. What did he mean by that?
Well, I think there is a general consensus that an income tax-based system of the sort that exists in many states and obviously at the federal level has become very, very complex. Its effects hit people quite inequitably. It exerts a real drag on the economy. It's complicated. It requires all kinds of administrative things, both, you know, in terms of the governments involved, but also, you know, all of us who likes to sit down and fill out all those forms and everything. Consumption taxes, meaning, you know, at the state level, certainly sales taxes, or in other countries, value-added taxes, which are quite common, are much less burdensome in the sense that you simply pay them when you buy something. They also have an advantage in economic terms of, in a relative sense, encouraging more savings and investment rather than consumption. And I think across the ideological spectrum, economists generally think that it's a good idea to encourage savings and investment and discourage consumption. So there is some non-ideological basis for all of this, and I think everyone agrees that if you could construct something that remains progressive or at least doesn't become more regressive, that moving toward a more consumption-based system makes some sense. But this is something that, you know, certainly emanates much more from the right than from the left.
There is pushback from various groups. People are just kind of absorbing this right now, and the budget itself is going to be unveiled, I think, today in more detail, one hopes. But what is the reaction in these other states, much the same as it is here, wanting to see the bottom line first before reaching too deeply into the pushback mode?
I think that's right. I mean, you know, in Louisiana, for example, Governor Jindal has not released any details of how he wants to go about ending the income tax and replacing it with a sales tax. It gets very, very complicated because, you know, the questions immediately arise, well, you know, what exactly would be exempt from this state sales tax? What would be included? My understanding is that Governor Kasich has done something, you know, that I think a lot of people who have studied this issue have called for some time, which is to suggest that the sales tax needs to be expanded to services and not just goods that you buy. You know, our economy was once, long ago, a very goods-based economy. It's now much more of a service-based economy. As I wrote in my story, you know, if you go and get a haircut, there's no sales tax on it. But if you go and buy, you know, hairspray or mousse or gel or something, that gets taxed. Well, what's the distinction there? But then you get into, well, do you tax doctors and lawyers and accountants and, you know, exactly what services get taxed and which don't? It gets very, very complicated very quickly. But I think moving towards something that encompasses more services, as he is something that is going to be a big issue in a lot of states.
Some of these services are different than others. When we're talking about getting your hair cut or, you know, colored, which can get into the hundreds of dollars for some people, you're talking about tips as well. And a lot of people who do these services rely to a larger or a greater degree on their tips, and that could cut right into that, couldn't it?
I hadn't thought of that, but you're raising, you know, a very good point there. And, you know, every state already has different rules. There's no uniform approach here. But, you know, this gives you another indication of why these things are so complicated. So many special interests get involved in them. And, you know, there's a lot at stake for individuals, industries, and state economies. There's one other aspect of this, of course, which, you know, is I think to some degree probably at play in all of these states, which is that they are competing with one another to create a climate in which companies will be tempted to locate to Ohio or Louisiana. And, you know, a lot of Republican governors who believe very strongly that income taxes, particularly high marginal income tax rates, discourage corporate CEOs and other high-earning people who make the decisions about where companies locate to move there. And, you know, a place like California, which has a Democratic governor and a Democratic legislature and recently increased state income taxes for high-earning people, you know, creates a certain class of, you know, economic refugee, both individuals and companies. And a lot of these states with Republican governors believe that they can compete to attract those people and those employers by reducing their state income tax rates. Whether that really will work or not is an open question, and there's a lot of debate about the degree to which state income taxes really affect that kind of equation.
Well, Richard Stevenson, thanks for talking with us today about it. I appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
Richard Stevenson, he's a reporter for the New York Times. You can see a link to his story on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. There is that border state aspect. Has Jim Siegel, has anybody reared that ugly issue like they always do whenever a sales tax thing is involved in Ohio?
Well, it's usually on the income tax that it's brought up.
But cigarettes, alcohol, those kind of
things. Sure, yeah. It's brought up another thing. But in this context, it's often brought up with the income tax because we are surrounded by a number of states that have a flat tax. I believe Pennsylvania, Indiana, and Michigan all have a flat tax.
Right.
Roger, probably tell me if I'm incorrect there, but their flat tax rate is, you know, is lower than our top tax rate. However, and this is where Mr. Stevenson was talking about, you know, there's this theory that if you bring down the top tax rate, you attract more of the high income folks who are making the decisions at these companies maybe to bring their companies to Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, most Ohioans, like, for example, I think Michigan's flat tax is, I think, 4.2%, which is, you know, less than our 5.9% at our top rate. However, the vast majority of Ohioans pay less state tax than 4.2% because we have this progressive rate. In fact, I think to get to 4.2%, you have to earn about $150,000 in Ohio before you'll pay that rate. And it's the same in other states as well that have a flat tax because they start taxing at that rate at a much lower, maybe at zero or at a much lower level than we do. You know, if on the first $55,000 in income in Ohio, you only pay a 3% tax rate. So it does. So there's this balance of what do we want to do that we think is good for business? What do we want to do what's the reality for most people in the state, most taxpayers? And the reality is most taxpayers are paying less than a lot of these states that surround us who have flat taxes.
Roger Greger?
Yeah, my only response, though, a little bit, Jim, is that, again, it was mentioned earlier, it's the collective tax burden of this state. So, I believe that we are a high-tax state. We are not in the middle. I believe by the time you look at all of the over 600 taxing jurisdictions, from solid waste districts to counties to schools, I mean, the tax burden of individuals in this state is pretty significant. I also want to remind you that the income tax, it's what I started out with, it is the business tax that small businesses pay.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about the CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. Yes, they may make some of those decisions in the boardroom. But the vast majority of folks that are $750,000 or less, those are small businesses in every community of this state. they are the ones that are the economic engines of Marion, Ohio, and of Delaware, Ohio, and Marietta, Ohio. That's who we're talking about this. So, you know, I think it's when we look at the burden, those are the folks that I believe the governor was targeting when he looked at the income tax reduction as well as the business deduction for the first $750,000, the rate coming down as well as the reduction. I think it's really targeted those. So I think we're missing who he was really aimed at. Now, to your point about broadening the sales tax on borders, absolutely. I mean, we have major communities, whether it's Toledo or whether it's Cincinnati or Youngstown, where these services can be easily gotten right across the state line. And half a percent, a percent, it may make a difference for certain types of services. And I do think there's a really legitimate talk about, and that shows you the complexity of all this.
Well, I know people who like to shop at Easton rather than Polaris for that. You know,
yeah, absolutely.
Because the sales tax is higher.
Right. People will travel.
And especially impacts high ticket items. You know, when we're talking about jewelry, you know, it really does impact high ticket items.
And I guess that's in the eye of the beholder. Horse boarding and training probably isn't something that's typical, but it's probably a more of an upper income you know, thing. Let's just run through the pet grooming, horse boarding, interstate courier service, marine towing service, packing and crating, whatever that is, refuse collection, insurance services, investment counseling, loan broker fees, property sales agents, real estate, ticker tape reporting, financial reporting, accounting, cutting, coloring, styling of hair, debt counseling, mailbox rentals. It just goes on and on and on. Jim Siegel, real quickly, where do they even get this list from? Do we know yet?
It's an IRS list.
It's right. IRS. Yeah. Okay.
And don't forget, we have been taxing services in this state. I mean, 2 years ago or 4 years ago, Jim, we added lawn care. Mm-hmm. So it's not a total phenomenal. It's not like we all of a sudden picked up every service. We've been taxing services in this state for
kind
some time.
Kind of on an ad hoc basis, here and there, adding
and
them
picking
in.
Up wherever you need a couple extra $100 million. You find out who doesn't have a very good lobbyist in Columbus, and you go after him. I mean, that's the cynical part of this. But yes, so we've been taxing services. There's been a creep on taxing services for a long time. This just gets everybody now.
We're just about out of time. Jim Siegel, any predictions about whether this whole list will it get through altogether or not at all?
I think you'll see it's going to be tough because if they want to really lower the income tax rate, they got to find the money, and this is where a lot of the money comes from. So if you're going to take things off the list, now you're going to talk about, okay, now what are we going to do to help make sure that the numbers balance in the end? So it'll be an interesting process.
Well, thanks for joining us today. It was a busy hour, and I appreciate your time. Roger Geiger, Ohio Executive Director for NFIB. Roger, thanks for joining us. And Jim Siegel, State House Reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Jim, as always, thanks for joining us.
I'm happy to be here.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.